ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, Text Number 3. Kesharoma Nakha Samshru Malani Bibhryat Dataha न धावेत अप्सु मज्जेता त्रिकालं स्तंडिलेशयः केशरोमा नकशंश्रु मलानि बिभ्राद्दतः न धावेत अप्सु मज्जेता त्रिकालं स्थंडिलेशयः केशरोमानकशंश्रु मलानि बिभ्राद्दतः न धावेदप्सु मज्जेत त्रिकालं स्थंडिलेशयः। Matajis, Kesha, hair on the head. Roma, bodily hair. Nakha, fingernails and toenails. Shamshru, facial hair. Malani, bodily waste products. Bibhryat, one should tolerate. Dataha, the teeth. Na dhavet, should not clean. Apsu, in water. Majjeta, should bathe. Trikalam, three times a day. Sthandile, on the earth. Shayaha, lying down. Translation: the vanaprastha should not groom the hair on his head, body or face. Should not manicure his nails, should not pass stool and urine at irregular times, and should not make a special endeavor for dental hygiene. He should be content to take bath in water three times daily and should sleep on the ground. This doesn't have any purpose, so we'll be reading text 4 also. ग्रीष्मे तप्येत पञ्चाग्नीन् वर्षास् आसार षाड्जले ఆకంఠ మగ్న శిశిర ఏవం వ్రతస్తపశ్చరేత్. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్: Thus engaged as a vanaprastha, one should execute penance during the hottest summer days by subjecting oneself to burning fires on four sides and a blazing sun overhead. During the rainy season, one should remain outside, subjecting oneself to torrents of rain, and in the freezing winter, one should remain submerged in water up to one's neck. Purport: One who engages in sense gratification must perform severe penances at the end of life to counteract his sinful hedonistic activities. A devotee of the Lord, however, naturally develops Krishna consciousness and need not subject himself to such radical penances. As stated in the Pancharatra, Aradito yadi haris tapasatatakim, Aradito yadi haris tapasatatakim, అంతర్బహిర్యది హరిస్ తపసా తతక్యం నాంతర్బహిర్యది హరిస్ తపసా తతక్యం. ఇఫ్ వన్ ఇస్ వర్షిపింగ్ ద లార్డ్ ప్రాపర్లీ, వాట్ ఇస్ ద యూజ్ ఆఫ్ సివియర్ పెనెన్సెస్? అండ్ ఇఫ్ వన్ ఇస్ నాట్ ప్రాపర్లీ వర్షిపింగ్ ద లార్డ్, వాట్ ఇస్ ద యూజ్ ఆఫ్ సివియర్ పెనెన్సెస్? ఇఫ్ శ్రీ కృష్ణ ఇస్ రియలైజ్డ్ విదిన్ అండ్ విదౌట్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ దట్ ఎగ్జిస్ట్స్, వాట్ ఇస్ ద యూజ్ ఆఫ్ సివియర్ పెనెన్సెస్? And if Shri Krishna is not seen within and without everything, then what is the use of severe penances? Om Ajnanadimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuronmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూపకదామయ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం. వందేహం శ్రీగురో శ్రీయుతాపదకమలం శ్రీగురూన్ వైష్ణవాంశ్చ శ్రీరూపం సాగ్రజాతాం సహగణా రఘునాథాన్వితం త్వం సజీవం సాద్వైతం సావధూతం పరిజనా సహితం కృష్ణ చైతన్యదేవం శ్రీరాధా కృష్ణపాదాన్ సహగణా లలితా శ్రీ విశాఖాన్వితాంశ. హే కృష్ణ కరుణా సింధో దీనబంధో జగత్పతే గోపేశా గోపికా కాంత శ్రీరాధా కాంత నమోస్తుతే. తప్త కాంచనా గౌరాంగీ శ్రీరాధే వృందావనేశ్వరీ ఋషభానుసుతే దేవీ ప్రణమామి హరిప్రియే వాంచా కల్పతరుభ్యశ్చ కృపా సింధుభ్యైవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జయ శ్రీ కృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార్ శ్రీవాసది గౌరభక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ. సో ద వర్స్ ఇస్ అబౌట్ తపస్య. సో యాక్చువల్లీ వెన్ ఇట్ కేమ్ టు తపస్య, శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్ కైండ్ ఆఫ్ ఫ్రీక్వెంట్లీ కోటెడ్ వన్ పర్టిక్యులర్ వర్స్ ఫ్రమ్ ద శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం. And what was that? Nayam Deva Kashtan Kaman Arati Vidvijame Tapo Divyam Pitrakayena Sattvam Shuddhyed Yasmat Brahma Saukyam Tvanantam. This Rishabdev's teachings to his sons, and he begins his teachings with this particular verse that human life is meant for tapasya, because the natural tendency of a conditioned soul is to engage in material sense gratification. And in order to properly make spiritual advancement, one has to refrain from material sense gratification. And refraining from material sense gratification involves tapasya. That is tapasya. It's kind of stretching yourselves to do things which you would normally not do, and stretching yourselves to avoid things which you would have normally done. And Prabhupada was very particular and very straightforward in this particular point, that any spiritual path which doesn't have that ingredient of tapasya in it is bogus. Because in order to get out of conditioned life, to get back to our normal state of existence, tapasya is necessary to refrain from sense gratification. And Srila Prabhupada, he kind of, in his purports, he makes many such statements. He says, nothing is possible without tapasya. And then he says, to engage in tapasya or denial of material activities is the first principle of spiritual life, he says. Throughout his purports, through his lectures, in his conversations, everywhere, Prabhupada made this point very clear. Tapasya is extremely important for making spiritual advancement. In the scriptures, this tapasya is especially meant for the vanaprasthas. Like in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the divine qualities. He says, abhayam sattvasham shuddhir jnana yoga vyavasthiti, then danas damascha yagyascha swadhyayas tapa arjavam, he says. And there he kind of classifies which qualities belongs to which sections of society. And he says that abhayam, fearlessness, sattvasham shuddhi, that is purification of existence, these belong to the sannyasis. And even, you know, jnana yoga vyavasthiti, that is also for the sannyasashram. So the sannyasis have to engage in, you know, cultivation of knowledge and should focus on purification of existence, especially. These are meant for everybody, but especially for the sannyasis. And then he says, you know, danas, damascha, yagyascha. Dana, charity, damas, that is control of the mind. And yagya, performance of sacrifice, is especially meant for the grihasthas. Everyone should perform it, but it's especially meant for the grihasthas, he says. Then swadhyaya is meant for whom? It's for the brahmacharis, Prabhupada says. Swadhyayas, tapa arjavam. Tapa, Prabhupada says, is especially meant for the vanaprastha ashram. Why is tapa or performance of austerities especially important for the vanaprasthas? Because vanaprastha ashram comes after the grihastha ashram. And grihastha ashram is kind of a license for sense gratification, Prabhupada says. And because it's a kind of a license for sense gratification, so a person is habituated to sense gratification, and one has to get out of that mode as soon as possible. So the brakes are put on in the vanaprastha life. So vanaprastha ashram, a person engages in severe austerities and penances to come out of that mentality of sense gratification. Because time is very short, it's an emergency. One has to put on emergency brakes. So emergency brakes means a lot of tapasya is involved there. So especially the vanaprasthas, as you can see here, detailed descriptions of severe kinds of austerities which is recommended for people in the vanaprasthashram. And even in the fourth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the episode of Prithu Maharaj, it is described how Prithu Maharaj entered the vanaprastha ashram. And it is described that Prithu Maharaj executed his duties in the vanaprastha ashram as severely, with as much focus as he had performed his duties in the grihastha ashram. Just like in the grihastha ashram, he was very focused in conquering lands and, you know, doing proper administration. With the same kind of intensity and focus, he practiced austerities even in the vanaprastha ashram, the Srimad Bhagavatam describes, while describing the life of Prithu Maharaj. And then there is a description of the kind of austerities that Prithu Maharaj performed in his vanaprastha life. And the description there is almost similar to the description which can be found in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And while, you know, Prabhupada kind of gives a purport to Prithu Maharaj's austerities in the vanaprastha ashram, Prabhupada, he kind of gives a lot of hope to devotees in ISKCON actually, because Prabhupada makes it very clear, as the disciples of Prabhupada make it very clear in this particular purport, that actually devotees don't have to perform such severe austerities and penances. Even though we have to perform tapasya, but we don't have to perform such severe austerities and such severe tapasya. And while reading this purport and then comparing it to the purports of Srila Prabhupada in the fourth canto, I got a feeling that maybe the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, while compiling these purports, were referring to those purports of Srila Prabhupada also, because there were a lot of similarities in the way Prabhupada explains and how they are explaining it here. So while Prabhupada explains Prithu Maharaj's austerities in the vanaprastha ashram in the fourth canto, he makes it very clear that devotees really don't have to undergo such severe austerities and penances. And I would like to read a small section from his purport. So Prabhupada quotes the exact same verse as the disciples of Prabhupada quote here. Aradito yadiharis tapasatatakyam. Prabhupada says, as it is said in the Narada Pancharatra, Aradito yadi haris tapasa tatakyam. If Krishna is worshipped, if he is the goal of advancement, there is no need for one to execute severe types of tapasya, because one has already reached his destination. Because the destination is already reached, because one is already aware in the path of bhakti yoga that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. That understanding is already there. So there is no need to undergo such severe types of austerities and penances, Prabhupada says. And Prabhupada says, we should therefore not be discouraged just because we cannot go to the forest and practice severe austerities. And Prabhupada gives a positive alternative for such austerities and penances. He says, for a transcendental, blissful life, chant the Hare Krishna mantra, come worship the holy place of Vrindavan, and always engage in the service of the Lord, of the spiritual master, and of the Vaishnavas. This Krishna consciousness movement is therefore very safe and easy. We have only to execute the order of the Lord and fully surrender unto Him. So Prabhupada gave very simplified versions of tapasya for advancement in spiritual life. Basically, if you go through Prabhupada's purports, in most places, when Prabhupada says tapasya, he refers to following the four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, and no meat eating. And in some places, you know, Prabhupada refers to tapasya as following Ekadashi. Simple procedures of tapasya. And in one place, Prabhupada says tapasya is, you know, taking bath in holy rivers, like in the Ganges or in the Yamuna. And he says that we have established centers in Vrindavan and Mayapur, especially so that people can stay there and take regular baths in the Ganga and the Yamuna. And in a few places, Prabhupada refers to tapasya as devotees performing their prescribed duties. For example, of preaching. Preaching is tapasya. Because any service in this world, and preaching included within that involves a lot of austerities while it is being performed in this world. So it is tapasya. Prabhupada refers to it as tapasya. In a very nice letter which Prabhupada wrote to one of his disciples, Govindadasi. Now Govindadasi and Gaur Sundar Prabhu, her husband, they were living in Hawaii and they were kind of engaging in preaching activities there. And while preaching, a fanatic kind of attacked Gaur Sundar Prabhu and Gaur Sundar Prabhu was injured. And apparently Govindadasi wrote about this incident to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada is replying to this letter of Govindadasi. And in his letter, Prabhupada says, the whole world is full of fanatics and atheistic class of men. So sometimes we have to face such difficulties, he says. But this is all tapasya. Without tapasya, nobody can approach Krishna. So preachers who boldly face all kinds of difficulties are considered to be under tapasya. And Krishna takes note of such tapasya of the devotee, and the devotee is recognized by him. And then Prabhupada, you know, he gives a very sweet touch to his letter. He says, I have asked the BTG men to publish your heroic preaching activities under the heading of Heroine Govindadasi. Now, in the path of Bhakti Yoga, even though tapasya is mandatory, still the kind of tapasya that we are expected to indulge in isn't very severe kind of tapasya. As I was mentioning, Prabhupada recommended some basic kinds of tapasya, like following the regulative principles, taking bath, or preaching. But just the minimum kinds of tapasya is being recommended by Srila Prabhupada. But as practitioners of Bhakti Yoga, it's important that even though the amount of tapasya is very less, it's always important to keep in mind what is the goal of tapasya. Because the advantage of Bhakti Yoga is we already know the goal. And because we already know the goal, there is no need to engage in such severe tapasyas or austerities. But as practitioners of Bhakti Yoga, we should make it sure that the goal is very clear in our mind all the time. Or else, even the basic amount of tapasya will become more and more burdensome. If the goal is not very clear in mind, for whom we are performing this tapasya, that we are performing this tapasya for the pleasure of Shri Krishna. If the goal is not clear in mind, then whatever little tapasya that we are performing seems to grow in weight with the passage of time. And this necessity of keeping the purpose, the cause, the goal always clear in our mind is not just important on the spiritual path, it's important even for material life. Because even in material life, a person can't get a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment even on a material platform unless a person has the goal, the cause or the purpose very clear in his or her mind actually. Now, you know, in management books, you know, in one of the books that I was reading, it was described that people who accomplish a lot in life, in the material world, some of them have a sense of satisfaction, material satisfaction, but some others, even though they have achieved a lot, still don't have that sense of even material satisfaction.
Why? Because one set of people, even as they're growing big, you know, they have lost touch of the original cause or purpose for which they started doing what they were going to do. So all they have left in their life is achievements. So they got a lot of achievements, but deep within there is no satisfaction in their hearts. But those group of people who, while they were working very hard, kept the goal, the cause or the purpose very clear in their minds, they always had a sense of success. So achievement is different from success, this particular author says. Achievement means you don't have the cause or the purpose very clear in your mind. But success means you have a sense of cause, a sense of purpose clear in your mind. And a life of achievement is a hollow life. And a life of success is a fulfilling life, he says. You know, a management guru of the outside world says. And how much more true this is in the life of a sadhaka. If we forget the ultimate cause, if the ultimate cause, the ultimate goal, the purpose for which we are doing whatever we are doing on the path of bhakti yoga, if that becomes blur, or if we forget it, what happens is, as we progress on the path, we might have certain achievements. Maybe how much we have preached, or what services that we have done. And that can't give a sense of satisfaction. But if we have the goal or the purpose that whatever I'm doing it for the pleasure of Krishna, for the satisfaction of Krishna, if that is always clear in our mind, if it is crystal clear in our mind all the time, then what happens is, as we progress, we always have a sense of success. A sense of success means a sense of fulfillment, a sense of satisfaction in life. Because we always know, I'm doing it for the satisfaction of Krishna. So that's a life of achievement versus a life of success. So when we are heading ahead on the path of achievement, another problem that arises is, we are always competing with others. Because no matter how much you achieve in this world, there will always be somebody who has achieved more than you. So if you're simply focusing on the achievements, we'll always be dissatisfied. This is true in material life, this is true even in spiritual life. In spiritual life, if you forget the ultimate cause, the ultimate purpose, and if our consciousness is simply focused on the achievements, we'll degrade our consciousness to competition. We'll always be comparing ourselves with other devotees. I've achieved so much, some other devotees have achieved so much. And we'll always be on that materialistic platform of competition. But if we are leading a life where we are governed by the principle of success rather than achievement, we don't compete with others, we compete with ourselves. How closer I am to my cause, to my purpose, to my goal today, as compared to how close I was yesterday? Am I coming closer to my ultimate cause, ultimate purpose, or the ultimate goal as time is passing by? So every single day in the morning, we are competing with ourselves, competing with what I was yesterday vis-a-vis what I am today. So we compete with ourselves. So if we are very clear in our mind that the goal, the purpose is to please Krishna, every single morning we get up and we contemplate, you know, am I closer to the goal of pleasing Krishna, satisfying Krishna and making Krishna happy, right? And especially when it comes to performance of austerities or tapasya, it's all the more important to have a life which is governed by the principle of success rather than by the principle of achievement. Because whether it be material or spiritual, to achieve anything in this world, tapasya is needed. Austerity is needed. In the management books, one of the books that I was reading some time ago, there is a story, like a kind of a short anecdote to make this point clear, that the ability to perform tapasya grows substantially when you are governed by the principle of success rather than achievement. That means when you are having a goal, the purpose or the cause very clear in your mind. Suppose a temple is being built and there is a mistri or a mason who is building the temple. And you go and ask that person, "Sir, do you like your job?" So the mason or the mistri, he replies to you. He says, "I don't really know for how long I have been working on this project. It has been such a long time. I don't even remember properly when I began it. And I have to work under the blazing sun. It is really hot all through the day. The work is quite monotonous. The same thing, using the bricks to build the temple walls. And the bricks are pretty heavy, so sometimes the back hurts. And I don't even know for how long this project is going to continue. But I have to work on this project. Why? Because it gives me my salary." So you thank the person for his answer. You go and meet another mason or mistri who is working on the same project. And you ask that person, "Sir, do you like your job?" And he says, "Yes, of course, I like my job. I am building a temple. Yes, I don't even know how long I've been working on this project. And it's pretty hot. The sun is blazing. And it's pretty hot. It's pretty austere to work under the blazing sun. And the work is quite monotonous. The bricks are pretty heavy, so the back hurts. And I don't even know how long this project will continue. But I'm building a temple. So I love my job." So the second person has the cause, the purpose, the goal very clear in his mind. So he's able to overcome all the austerities and the tapasya which is involved in his work. Whereas the first person doesn't have the cause or the purpose or the goal, something beyond himself very clear in his mind. And because of that, he's overburdened by these austerities and the tapasyas involved in the work. Now, in one sense, the process of sadhana bhakti is about building a temple within the heart, right? For Krishna. And this job too, you don't know for how long, when it has begun. Maybe in some previous lifetime. And there is tapasya involved. The work is quite monotonous. Sadhana bhakti is quite monotonous. The same thing day in and day out. And we don't even know how long this work is going to continue. And this job of building the temple within the heart, the tapasya involved in it, whatever, however small it is, will become very, very burdensome, and we won't be able to tolerate it unless we have the purpose, the goal, the objective very clear in our minds. That is, I'm doing all this for the pleasure of Krishna. It's very important to have the goal, the purpose, the cause very clear in our mind all the time. Otherwise, even though the tapasya might be minimal, even that little tapasya in due course of time will start burdening us more and more and more and more as time progresses. And to keep the goal clear, it's very important to be always in touch with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. To keep the goal very clear in our minds. The philosophy, the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. It is very important to be in regular touch with the philosophy so that the goal is very clear in our minds. And Prabhupada brings this point out very beautifully in one of his letters. He wrote to his disciple, Bhargava Prabhu, in 1969. In his letter he writes, "The more we become renounced from this material world, the more we advance in Krishna consciousness. But we are only able to make such sacrifices and perform tapasya if we have got knowledge." So first thing is to become knowledgeable in Krishna consciousness. Then the tapasya or voluntary life of austerity will result automatically. So I am requesting all my students to read my books very seriously every day without fail. In this way, if your mind becomes absorbed at least 1 or 2 hours daily in the transcendental subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita and other books, then very easily you will make your advancement in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada is recommending here every single day and at least 1 or 2 hours. Then what happens? The goal, the purpose of our tapasya is very clear in our minds and it becomes easy to continue performing the tapasya. And it's very interesting that Prabhupada wrote this letter somewhere in July of 1969, and within a span of 3 or 4 days, he kind of continues with the same theme in many of his letters. In another letter that he wrote in July to Bob Cohen, Brahmatirtha Das, Adhikari, Brahmatirtha Prabhu, he makes the same point. At that time his name was Bob. And Prabhupada writes in that letter, he says that if you get knowledge, automatically tapasya will follow. And then you make your advancement in spiritual life. I advise you to daily read our books as far as possible and try to understand the subject matter from different angles of vision by discussing frequently with the devotees at New York, he says. So Prabhupada recommends not just reading books but also discussing it with God brothers. And in the same time period, in the span of 3 or 4 days, he writes a letter to Madhu Disha Prabhu, who was a GBC at that time, and he gives the elaborate plan for the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. And he says that during Bhagavatam class, the devotee should discuss the philosophy from different angles of vision. And when the knowledge becomes very clear, in the same letter he mentions, performing tapasya becomes very easy. So, within a span of 3-4 days, in the same period, Prabhupada repeats the same point again and again in 4 or 5 of his letters. Now, while we are performing this bhakti yoga, as I was telling, to be conscious that I'm doing it all for Krishna is very important. Or else, it's very difficult to find even peace of mind. Now the peace formula is given in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Bhuktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwaram surudam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shanti mrichati. So for a sense of peace to be there, an important ingredient is to be fully conscious that Krishna is the enjoyer. Bhuktaram yagya tapasam. He is the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities that I am doing. Unless we are conscious that Krishna is accepting whatever tapasya I am doing, It is very difficult to find that peace of mind in the life of a devotee actually. Because in this world, we might be doing tapasya in our own corner. And however small or big it might be, we can't expect reciprocation all the time in this world. Sometimes people appreciate, oh, you are performing nice tapasya. Tapasya in terms of services, or tapasya in terms of preaching or whatever we are doing. Sometimes we get that reciprocation, that appreciation, but many times we cannot expect in this world. And when we don't get that appreciation and reciprocation for our tapasya, we lose peace of mind. But what is the peace formula? The peace formula is to be always conscious that people in this world sometimes might be reciprocating or appreciating the tapasya that I am doing. But Krishna, in all cases, is always accepting whatever tapasya or austerities that I am doing. And when we are conscious of this fact, then while performing tapasya, whether we gain appreciation or from other people or not, we are always peaceful from within. In a very beautiful class of His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj, which he gave when he was speaking on the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he drives home this point in a very beautiful way. He says that whenever, whatever, you know, tapasya we are performing or whatever services we might be performing, it is very important to be always conscious that Krishna is accepting our tapasya, Krishna is accepting our services. It's important to be always conscious of this fact. It's one of my favorite classes which Maharaj has given. The title of this class is Faith is a Substance of Bhakti. And I would like to read a small excerpt from his class, from his transcription, from the transcription of that class. He says, when we are making a garland, we have such faith that Krishna at this moment, at this very moment, is accepting my service. When we are sitting in Bhagavatam class, when we are chanting our rounds, when we are doing kirtan, we are sweeping the floor or washing the walls or whatever service we are doing, management or book distribution or taking care of our child or our parents or studying in school with a spiritual purpose, whatever service we may be doing, it's important that we have complete faith that here and now, at this very moment, Krishna is present. Present in my heart, present in between any atom, present in the effulgence of Brahman, present in the moon and the sun, present, watching, hearing, responding, accepting my efforts. And if I am doing it properly, Krishna at this very moment is pleased with me. That is bhakti. Not that I will please Krishna tomorrow. Tomorrow never comes in that sense. For example, here, when we are sitting in the Bhagavatam class, whether you are sitting in the Bhagavatam class or if you are not sitting in the Bhagavatam class, sitting in the Bhagavatam class is tapasya. But whether you perform it or not, nobody generally cares, especially in our temple. So what is the motivation to perform that tapasya? The motivation is Krishna is seeing, Krishna is accepting at this very moment. And Maharaj goes on to say that this strong faith is mandatory, not just to continue performing our services, but also to rise to the next level of devotional service. He says that this is, Nishtha means very, very deep and strong faith. That Krishna is right now here accepting my tapasya, accepting my services. Nishtha means very, very deep and strong faith. This is preliminary to bhava or to love awakening within our hearts. Means we have very strong foundation of faith in whatever we do. Only when we have this nishtha can we progress to the stage of bhava. So to be fully conscious that Krishna is accepting all the tapasya that I am performing on the path of bhakti yoga is not just important to keep doing it year after year after year after year, but it's also important to make spiritual progress, to actually come to the level of bhava at some point of time. So these are some thoughts that I had about tapasya or austerities. Thank you very much for your time. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.